This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora te whanau and welcome to the AA Live radio show for this wintry evening. This is a show and a podcast that explores the ideas and ways of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. Hey, my name is Sue and thank you all for joining us from around the motu and world tonight. How fabulous! You're all tuned in and wrapped up warm, I hope. Hey, Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through a 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where we learn how to live life. We do the mahi together and work through those 12 steps. And the most important thing is that we also realise we don't try to deal with the problem by ourselves. We bring the problem out into the open with other alcoholics. I'm flying solo here at the ORFM studio this evening. I don't know why I'm singing, but I am, because my primary purpose is to introduce the interview I captured last Sunday morning with our guest Hamish, off-site, out of ORFM studio, and in the sanctuary of Hamish's warm and more than comfortable, cosy lounge. It was amazing. Hey, the interview is just over 45 minutes long and will be played continuously with no edits and no cutting and pasting. It's a one-time take, if you like, of how Hamish expresses the dynamic solution that Step 7 offers in his program of recovery. So Step 7, now that's usually on the banner at present at most AA meetings, and it's hung on the wall or pinned up to the left-hand side of the 12 traditions, has all of six words, and it goes like this. It's humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. This is an action orientated step where you actively let go of the ego and character defects identified in steps 4 and 5, relying instead on a higher power for the strength to change. Six words, that's all it is. If you have your big book handy, there is a slightly more detail in chapter 6 on page 76 of the fourth edition, to be precise. And that's, again, as I was saying, it's in chapter 6 and it's titled Into Action. And that really outlines the processes of steps 5 to 11. However, to stay grounded and to keep our tried and true format of the AA Live program, I'll make a start with the daily reflection for the 21st of July. And this one is titled A Priceless Gift. It goes like this. By this time, in all probability, we have gained some measure of release from our more devastating handicaps. We enjoy moments in which there is something like real peace of mind. To those of us who have hitherto known only excitement, depression, or anxiety, In other words, to all of us, this newfound peace is a priceless gift. 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 74. I am learning to let go and let God, to have a mind that is open and a heart that is willing to receive God's grace in all of my affairs. In this way, I can experience the peace and freedom that comes as a result of surrender. It has been proven that an act of surrender, originating in desperation and defeat, can grow into an ongoing act of faith, and that means freedom and victory. How good is that? Hey, so listen up. So we've got 45 minutes off Hamish. Here we go. So, morning, Hamish.
Hello.
Hello, here we are. All cozied up in your home. Looking at the fire. Gorgeous. And I'm just thinking, because I just tripped out here on a Sunday afternoon, because this is meant to be going live tonight on the 21st of July, but we're pretending because it's just actually Sunday. But it's so nice to be here. I'm rubbing my hands because it's about sort of 4 degrees outside, but
And I see that you've got a big stack of chopped wood out there.
Yeah, I've been busy. Chopping wood.
What's your wood flavour or species that you like?
Well, because of my line of work, I'm lucky. I get old Australian hardwood.
Oh my gosh.
And it burns extremely hot, so it will get very warm in here very soon.
And you can you put a little pot on there and cook a casserole or something?
No, but in the past I have had a, what are they called? They're an old school stove that you can cook on and it would heat your water.
Like with a wet back or a pot back?
Yeah, it's got a, and like you could even cook roasts and stews on top of it. It was amazing.
Yum.
But that was like a whole different world because back then that's when I was drinking and I thought it was really cool.
Back when you were drinking. So that leads me on to a good question. So sobriety. How many years have you clocked up now?
I just celebrated 7 years May 27th. 2019.
Memorable day.
I got the gift of desperation and, man, yeah, what a ride it's been.
Yes,
it's been a ride. And, I just can't be, I'm just so thankful for that, you know. So many people don't get the opportunity that, you know, I've been given. And it comes from a place of... you know, utter demoralisation and pain and suffering. And, you know, when you're in it right at the start, way back in May 2019, I just didn't see a way out. And, you know, I sit here today a sober man, three of the four of alcohol. Like, how does that even happen? It blows me away.
It is pretty mind-blowing, eh?
Mm.
And I was just saying before we started recording that I was sitting, or I came into your kitchen, and I think I was 2 weeks sober, and I kind of didn't know what was happening, and I think I'd met you at the Mosgiel meeting. Is that right?
Yes, the Mosgiel meeting, my home group. Obviously, I live out here, so it's convenient. But I try and get around as many meetings as I can. I've been pretty slack, in all honesty, lately. But, any opportunity I get.
And has it just been the kind of, not so much slack? I mean, the idea that it is midwinter as well, or is it just a timing thing?
I just think, you know, life, I work full-time, and most of us do, you know. I've got to be careful how I say this because, you know, my sobriety has to be at the forefront. As far as my life goes, because if I don't have good sobriety, all the outside stuff in life can get, you know, untangled and quite messy. So, I guess at the stage where I'm at and where I am in my recovery journey, I'm doing enough to stay neutral, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's always more to do. It's never one and done, is it, in this game? And, you know, even just this today is a huge part in the right direction, you know. I do love being of service. And, yes, it does take up a lot of time, but, you know, so many people have given freely of themselves in my journey this far. And... you know, if there's one small thing I can do for another person, whether it be me and you sitting down here, Sue, talking about this or you know, greeting someone or picking someone up or just generally smiling at someone, helping family, however that looks, well, then, you know, that's going to ensure another day of sobriety, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
Life's pretty good.
And, did you get sobriety straight away? Or, I guess it's that going back a little bit. So, in that first early part.
Oh, yeah. So,
going back there without.
Yeah, I got to a place where I knew I was in trouble with my drinking. You know, being an alcoholic, I lived a life full of denial, blame. With that comes a lot of shame. So alcohol was the great thing that kept that all at bay. You know, it gave me that belief system that if I had alcohol, everything would be all right. So, yeah, I got to a place, God, you go through so many emotions. You know, I knew alcohol had me beat, but I took the mindset, well, you know, bugger it, I'll just keep drinking anyway, and that's my life, and that's how I'll continue to be. But it just got too much. And, you know, I'm a runner. I'm 1,000 Ks away from my place of birth where it all began. I thought I could outrun this thing. It follows me everywhere. I take me with me, you know. I'd run and I'd find the next bottle shop or I'd find the next person that drunk just like me. And, you know, the process just repeated itself over and over again. So, you know, I went down the medical avenue. I went to counsellors, psychologists, self-help books. I dipped my toes in AA when my relationship was right on the brink of ending because of my drinking.
So was that like going to a couple of meetings and then checking in to see if it fitted you or were you bad enough yet?
Yeah, exactly. I knew I was bad, but I just wasn't ready to surrender. I wasn't ready to get honest with myself about it, you know. I was still blaming everyone else. So I think, yeah, I went to 3 meetings. Off the top of my head, 2 of those people are still actively in the rooms, and I still remember that and draw a lot of strength out of that. Yeah, I just wasn't ready. And, you know, ultimately I saved the relationship and because I was seen to be doing something about it. But, you know, being an alcoholic, it doesn't. You know, I go back to that first drink and I'm away drinking again and it was really bad then. For the next 4 or 5 years, it got worse. You know, it never gets better. It always goes to another level of lowness and, you know, it's soul destroying and it rips your soul out. And ultimately, when I finally got to the end, I just didn't want to live anymore because I couldn't comprehend how I was going to live a life without alcohol. God, that's a sad place to be, but it's vital. It's necessary. The more
broken, right? It's what you have left.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, the more broken and hurt and damaged and the more pain you have and suffering, in my opinion, the better chance you've got at actually getting it, you know. And, yeah, that sounds pretty rough, and it is, but it's necessary because what other option do I have? To go on and drink to the bitter end and ultimately die or make a decision? Drinking's controlling my life and destroying everything around it, and now I want to make a change about that. And, you know, I can pay lip service to that or I can actually start to do a deep dive and get real and do what's necessary to turn this thing around. And, man, I've only scratched the surface. Eh? I'm 7 years in. I'm by no means no guru, no spiritual leader or anything. I'm just, like, trying to do one day at a time the best I can to maintain what I've got. And, you know, when it's all boiled down, it really is a simple program for a really complicated person being me that loves to overthink stuff and likes to drag myself back into that negative default where, you know, it's everyone else's fault. And if everyone would just behave and do what Hamish says, life would be utopia.
Yeah, that's the whole idea of controlling everything at every time.
So, it's interesting. So back to your question, I dipped my toes in AA. I carried on drinking for another 5 or 6 years. I sat in front of the bridge, Salvation Bridge coordinator. So I knew it was bad and, you know, was basically screaming for help. He was happy to take me in and go into rehab, but I just, once again, I couldn't quite commit to it. So I carried on drinking. And then if we fast forward, obviously it got worse. And, you know, I woke up one morning and it was just like, I'm done. You know, everyone I love had left me. So that relationship, she removed herself from the house with the children. And it was that day that I made the decision to stop drinking. And I didn't stop straight away. I ended up connecting with the bridge. And I said that I'd been in front of you before and I want to get real about this. I can't remember exactly how it went.
So that's the Salvation Army-based program, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is active here in Dunedin, yeah.
Amazing. I'll just forever be grateful for what they did for me in the early stages. Not only that, the medical community as well got pretty involved in.
Because it has to be staged, right? I mean, in terms of, I guess, people listening to this show tonight, that, you know, there can be a really severe reaction if you just completely stop.
Yeah, that was my experience. It was very structured. I was told to don't stop drinking straight away. Not so much by the Salvation Army, but by now I'd been to a doctor, I'd got a diagnosis, and I was given a date when I'd go into the bridge, but before that I had to detox at home. And, yeah, it was really bizarre. So I kept drinking for probably a week and a half, 2 weeks. And I was told to, you know, reduce the amount I was drinking down, which I did to some extent. And then, yeah, ironically, I got a phone call from, I can't remember the name of, there was two nurses. It was someone in the medical realm. I got a phone call, right, stop drinking at 6 o'clock on a Sunday night. And then that Monday morning, two nurses, bless them, turned up, and they took my blood pressure, did a few wee tests, made me hold my hands out, which were shaking, and they pumped me full of Valium, and I slept till lunchtime, and they come back, and they did the same thing, and then I slept, and then they come back at dinner time and did the same thing for 4 days. And then, bless the coordinator at the bridge, they usually don't, well, from my back then, they didn't take us in on a Friday, but I feel like it was leading into an Easter weekend or a holiday weekend, and he didn't want to leave me hanging. I feel like he thought I was going to drink again. So, yeah, I went into the bridge on the Friday, an absolutely mental and emotional wreck, and, yeah, my journey began. But, yeah. May 27th, 2019 was my first day of sobriety, and I haven't looked back since.
What a story. Yeah, It's not a story. It's happened. It's, you know.
Well, yeah, it's part of the process, you know. But, and that was my way in, yeah, knowing that I was alcoholic and I had a problem, but then getting to a place where, you know, I could start to make, or more to the point, do something about it, and the help is out there, you know. I've just got to want it, yeah. And I think that's the key. You got to want this deal.
And then it's what I have grown to understand as well. It's a plan. It's a of the 12 steps. It's also a plan of action, right? It's really practical. And I was just thinking about that yesterday when I was in a meeting, and no matter sort of how far you've come in a way, or even what your belief system is initially, the steps are there for a reason, but it really practical. What am I trying to say? It's sort of, there's a way of implementing it on a daily basis of how to, sure, we understand that we're powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. Love step one. Work on step one most mornings, you know, because I can be powerless over all sorts of things, and how do I manage that? So that's sort of a little bit digressing, but I was just thinking, because we're in July, and we look at step seven and what that may mean. And I just, it's an interesting one, because it comes obviously after step six, and it's a short one, and it says, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And it is a is it like an action orientated step, and it's kind of letting go of your ego, right? And you have to examine some of your character defects and asking for them to be removed slowly, like sometimes immediately, but you know, we have to keep I have to keep revisiting that and examine, you know, what were some of my own personal sort of characteristics, and then how can I sort of adjust them on a daily basis, you know, look at them in the face and sort of change my behaviors. What's your experience of step seven?
Well, it's huge, eh? Yeah. And when we touch on the steps, for me, I've always got to go back a couple because, you know, I can't get to step seven without doing the first six steps. And, you know, if we go right back to when I come in, I'd been living a certain way of life that clearly wasn't working. And, you know, you've touched on the steps, and it's all about getting to a place where you start to live a different life and you go about life differently. I didn't really realize that was the process. And I think that's the beauty of the program, is that it really is a self-discovery. And, you know, you use the word ego, and, you know, I come in, I'm egocentric. I've got an ego the size of Texas. When I come in, I'm still blaming everyone else. It's everyone else's problem why I've landed where I've landed. I don't want to take responsibility, accountability. You know, the world's dealt me a severe card that no one else could cope with, and it's just me, you know?
Self-pity run riot.
It is, and it's all about me. And that's, you know, because of the way the program's structured and the steps, it really does turn things back on you and it turns things back on me and makes me look at my part in everything in this deal. And, man, that's a huge realization. So, you know, ultimately you get humbled, you know. Well, that was my experience. I get humbled. So, yeah, the ego has to get squashed. And part of that process is taking accountability. And looking at the faults and the harms that I caused, not what everyone else is. The blame has to stop. And, you know, it's so, so rewarding knowing that, you know, I don't have to blame my mum and dad for the way I was brought up. And you know, they weren't forcing the alcohol on me. The alcohol was just a byproduct that, you know, made me behave in a certain way. And then conveniently I'd use that to blame, you know, I could blame my childhood or my past relationships or my boss or whoever, that's the reason why I drank, which, you know, created all the problems in my life. So when we look at step seven, I'm asking, you know, I'm humbly asking him to remove my shortcomings. Well, what does that look like? That's, yeah, and it's, you know, it comes from a place of humility. You know, I want freedom. I want freedom from self. I want freedom from Hamish. But then how do I go about that? You know, and if I go back to step six, you know, I've got these things called defects of character. And, you know, I don't
want to... I love how we're laughing about it.
It's great.
You know,
but it's great.
You know, it's not laughing, but we're sort of...
Oh, well, you do. I think you got to have a bit of a laugh. I mean, you can't take this all too seriously, you know? And, God, you know, I couldn't... Well, it's not that I couldn't. You know, I think we've all got lists of defects.
Because I used to be so... I used to hate that word defect because I would resist that as well. I was always about resisting. Like, I wanted to do things my way. Oh. Like, I'm not defective. You know,
yeah,
and I hated that word. It was too loaded for me, you know. Mm. But now, you know, as I've moved on, I understand it. I was just thinking, you know, I was like step four. You know, you're examining your characteristics, like who you are. Why did I get here? What are my essential sort of fears or, I guess, parts of self? Yeah.
I guess, you know, it's the finger pointing has to stop. So I'm still looking outwards and not really looking inwards. So, you know, once the finger pointing stops and you start to take responsibility for past actions and behaviours, from my experience, you start to bring awareness to that. And, you know, if I've got a good sponsor, he'll point that out and he'll get me to write that down, and then I can see it on paper. I can actually see it in front of me. And, you know, you can't hide from this. You can't. There's no hiding from it. You know, there's no denying that I was an absolutely, you know, I wasn't very nice when I was drinking. And, you know, a lot of that was these defects of character, you know, trying to control the outcome. If everyone would just do what Hamish said, you know, things would be different. And then I wouldn't get that, and I'd get angry or do some behaviour to get my way around that, or to get what I would want. And then I'd get it, and it wouldn't be enough. Or if I got it, I'd be satisfied, some form of instant gratification. But depending on how I got that, through manipulation or some fear-based problem or thinking, it actually wouldn't sit well with me. And then I'd start beating myself up inside about that outcome. And, you know, it's a hard deal. And, you know, we're talking about, this is in sobriety. This is when we're not drinking, trying to do the right thing. So, yeah, the ego has to be squashed. And you know, I've experienced that. And then I've experienced it being reborn as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was in my seventh year of sobriety. And, you know, we talk about these shortcomings. I thought I was doing the program right. And, you know, I ended up, I was, the fear, the self-centered fear come back in, and I didn't even see it. And I was praying, and it was pointed out to me, yeah, you're praying all right, Hamish, but you're praying for your will. Yeah, and, you know, I was praying for the outcome that I thought I want. So ultimately, I was playing God again. And if that's not a defect or a shortcoming, I don't know what is. And so out of that fear, I was making decisions based on fear, which was not only hurting me internally, but it was hurting other people, and I couldn't even see it. And man, I got humbled again, you know. I got humbled big time. And, you know, thank God for this program, because there was a particular person. Like, I lost so much weight around this. I was stressed out and just full of fear again. And I had a wee op, I had a hernia and lots of stuff going on. But see, it's good. It's all good to have excuses. That's just part of life. And I lost about 12 kilos, and everyone was saying, God, you're looking so gaunt and skinny. And I was like, I know, I'm like full of anxiety. And one particular person come up and said, how you going, Hamish? And I said, oh, I'm not that well. I'm just really, really struggling. I've got anxiety and whatnot. And bless her, you know, this is the program in action. She said, look, I know someone that if you need to, you can go and talk to. And I was like, well, thank you. And you know, I did a bit of outside work. I went back to a counsellor, and we sort of started unpacking some of this stuff. And you know, I got through it. It was pointed out to me, you know, I was praying for Hamish's will and not my higher powers. And slowly I started getting back on track, if you like.
Yeah, because I do hear about that, that track of midterm sobriety, or hopefully it's not a midterm, but you've experienced that.
I can't sugarcoat it. It was really, really rough. So, you know, I started unpacking stuff again, and I put distance between myself and AA. I was in between sponsors. I really wasn't doing a lot for my recovery, and I paid the price. Yeah, thank God I didn't go back to the bottle, you know. But that's where this thing can take you. You know, the alcoholic mind never really, really goes away. It's always just there in the background, just chipping away. And if it can't get me to pick up a drink, it will plant thoughts or seeds in my mind that will make me act out in other ways. It's such a cunning, baffling and powerful illness. You know, it is. We're talking about an illness, alcoholism. And, it can take me to places in my head that, you know, it's quite scary. It's really, really scary. So, you know, step seven comes back to, for me, about humility, suppression of ego, finding strength out of weakness, which is like what I kind of explained. So I went through this pretty rough ordeal, mental ordeal, and, you know, I can say I've come out the other end, and it's almost like another awakening of lights, you know, because from my experience, you go through a whole lot of pain, however that looks. But the cool part about it is, and you do come out the other side, it's just a matter of when. It could take, you know, whatever it takes. But the beauty of the program, it does, it makes you go back in, if I'm willing enough, and thank God I was, go back in, do some self-searching. And when you do that, through the guidance of a higher power and sponsorship and the program and the people in it, you come out the other side and you get another growth set and another, you have another awakening. And man, I'm so great. I wouldn't have it any other way, but I was crook. I was struggling mentally. And, you know,
Did you have a wedge for your, like, did you put a wedge in between yourself and your spiritual program?
With the benefit of hindsight, I did, you know, and it didn't become clear until I come out the other side, yeah.
Because when you're in it, right, you just sort of think, oh, this is another day and I'm feeling kind of super anxious. Shouldn't be speaking for you, by the way, but...
I get it.
And you just, everything's, you just go off tangent, right?
And I was like questioning myself. I'm like, I'm doing my morning readings, I'm doing my prayer, I'm doing meditation when I can, and I feel like I'm losing the plot here. And it's just, yeah, all I had to do was just reach out and ask. You know, that's all we have to do in this program. Yeah, we're all here for each other, you know. One alcoholic helping another. It's it's astonishing that, and I never thought that, you know, I've got this and everything's utopia, but I just, yeah, went into a place that I really struggled to come out of, and it was scary, man. It was scary. It was like a kick up the butt that I really needed. And, you know, it was all based on self-centered fear. And, yeah, step seven certainly helps with, you know, that change in attitude, which ultimately helps me to move out of myself, because that's where I was. I was back in myself, back in my head, back trying to run the show. And, you know, I had to do some stuff to help me come out the other side of that. And for that, I'm a hell of a lot stronger today as I sit here. But at that time, it was pretty punishing. And, you know, this is what happens in recovery. It's part of it. And, you know, there were lessons learned. And
that's that wonderful support network that's in the AA rooms. And also the others seeking support outside of the program if you get into those situations, right? Because all the expertise is there as well, whether it's counsellors or therapists.
Absolutely.
It's important to integrate that. if it's needed, right?
So thankful to come out the other side, and yeah, just to touch back on step seven, you know, to come to the realisation that, or pretty much, not so much step seven, where I land here right now, because I don't know, every there's new experiences, like, every day, and some of them are so subtle you don't really see them. Like, for me, there's road signs everywhere, and if I'm awake in the sense of, like, conscious and not making stuff all about Hamish, there's little signposts everywhere, little gifts, I guess you could say. And, you know, being awake, you take them in, and it takes me away from me. And I think that's the key, you know, I don't really need to be involved in anything going on in my life, like, per se. I guess what I'm trying to say, the less I make everything about me, the better my recovery and my life goes. And ultimately, where I sit right now, that lands with my mindset and how I think about things. I'm at a place now where I know that what my head tells me isn't true, and I love being aware of that. And, you know, lots of thoughts come in, negative, positive, whatever. I'm at the place now where I realise that they're just thoughts and they actually can't harm me. It's about being aware of those and just watching them and seeing them for what they are. It's about bringing awareness to what I'm thinking and is that the right action to take. And, you know, it's been really revealing, and it's a great place to be. And it, more importantly, it keeps me in the present moment, just in today. All I really need to worry about, or not worry, it's not a very good, all I need to try and practice is about being right here, right now, exactly where we are. So, and like,
money couch, you've got to fight, eating chocky bickies.
Exactly. Like, what more could you want, you know? We've got coffee cups here. You know, when I was actively drinking, they'd be full of red wine and I'd think you wouldn't even know, and I would be getting away with that, and, you know, I'd be all lit up. And, you know, like you just said, we're just sitting here having a coffee with chocolate biscuits and the fire's going. I mean,
own little one-on-one AA meeting.
And, you know,
bad.
I'm in the moment, and that's all I've got is right here, right now, and that's the key where I land in my recovery journey thus far. It's just about doing the next thing, however or whatever that looks like. And, you know, I always have gratitude for that. And it's a nice place to be. It's a sweet spot.
So it's, from hearing you talk now, it's like, not that running or being in sobriety is like a marathon, but it's sort of like you sound like you've got your second wind. You know, when you're running and you or jogging or something, or walking, you know, doing exercise, which is a sort of a, I don't know where I'm going with this analogy, but, you know, and you get up on a next level and you sort of feel a lot stronger.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that's been my experience. So, yeah, to growth, and I think it is all about growth. But for me, to get to a next level of growth, if you like, there has to be a certain amount of pain. And, yeah, that's just been my experience. I go through a series of uncomfortable truths, if you like. Most of it usually gets directed back to me and some form of behaviour or, you know, defect of character or shortcoming, if you like. And it beats me up a bit and it has its way with me. And, you know, then I decide to do something about it, however that may look. That might mean doing an extra meeting a week. It might be just doing something to get me out of me, or asking for help, or however that looks. Who knows? But, yeah, to get the growth, there has to be, from my experience, an element of pain or suffering. And, you know, that doesn't sound that great when I put it that way, but that's just been my experience.
Yeah.
You get through the pain and suffering, you will grow again and find another dimension. Don't ask me how that works. It's just the way it is. It's a good deal.
And that brings me to another sort of question I was going to ask you as well. It's like, in terms of sponsorship, because guiding people that you'll work with and watching or helping them, not alleviate, but listening to their process, because I understand that you sponsored in the past.
And it comes back to the program. So there was people there for me, and still is, that helped me with my recovery. You know, that's how it works. We don't do this alone. The past tells me that. You know, how did Hamish's life go when he was trying to control it by himself? Not that well. It's landed me here. Sponsorship, it's an amazing experience, and I'd like to think I'd never say no to anyone that comes to me. And it's amazing, you know. In sobriety again, I think it was in my 13-year relationship, basically imploded. And I think off the top of my head, 2 or 3 guys come to me. I'm going through this messy separation, there's property and stuff, and they're like, Hamish, can you help me? I want you to sponsor me. And my first thought was, and, you know, this is a defect of character or shortcomings, my first thought was like, oh, my God, what are these people, I'm in a bloody crisis here of my own life. I can't do this, da-da-da. My life's a mess. My head was telling me don't do it, but thank God I listened to whatever I was being told and I said yes, and it was the best thing that I could have ever have done, because once again it got me out of me, and I worked with these guys, my sponsor back then was in the loop, and there was lots of daily contact, and I was reworking the steps with these new guys, and it was just the most amazing experience. And I got through, I did that, and got through a relationship separation, and I come out the other side, stronger for it. And that's what I'm saying when I talk about there has to be an element of suffering and pain to come out the other side of stuff. And none of that was my doing. That was my higher power speaking through other people, asking me to help them. And it's another awakening of sorts, I guess, from my experience, because I look back through the steps and I get to pass on what was shown to me. And that's another aspect of this beautiful program. We help one another, and just because I have a little bit of time up doesn't mean I'm the best AA at it. We still experience our pain and suffering. It's what we decide to do with that, I think, is the key to maintaining, a level of recovery that's just, beyond my wildest dreams. So, it is a privilege to work with guys and see them, get lit up and move on and help other people.
Extraordinary.
It's just so humbling, and, that's where humility is born. Yeah, getting out of oneself and helping another. And, seeing your journey as well, so others that have recently celebrated, little personal milestones. It fills my cup seeing people just like me come in broken and busted to bits and, get a year or two or three or four up but still willing to carry on the journey. And that's the key, still having the willingness to do, to take the next best step to elevate and awaken more on the spiritual level. It's something not to be missed, and it's there for anyone that wants it. You've just got to be willing to do whatever it takes to get to that place.
I quite enjoy that word willing. It kind of had to be explained to me by another person in the fellowship. Sounds like I'm a really slow learner, but it just shows my resistance.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm just still holding, you know, in terms of wanting sobriety, but what does willing mean? And that's an interesting one.
And I love that, like, willingness and resistance, that they are like opposites. If I have resistance or I'm resisting something, well, then quite clearly I'm not willing to do what a sponsor, now because we're talking about sponsorship, I'm not willing to do what that person is suggesting. It's not like we're telling people what to do. It's like it really is a suggestion, and that's a key word. And I still had resistance. Oh, I don't want to do that. And I think that's the key. Like, you know, I love the saying, recovery or the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's all about doing the stuff you don't want to do, because it's easier to not do something. It's hard to do stuff you don't want to do. But if you do it, and I can't say what that's going to look like, but I can almost guarantee you from my own experience, for me, doing the stuff that I don't want to do is some form of growth and another level of recovery. And, you know, that's the key. Like, yeah, I see so many people that want to change, whether they're alcoholic or not. And it's like, well, I don't know, I'm out of shape and I'm not fit. Well, go to the gym, right? So they go to the gym for a week or two or a month and, oh, no, it's too hard. I've got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, and then you go back to your old ways. It takes work and like I said, you have to do the stuff that you don't want to do, and that's where you get the benefit. Yeah.
And that's, yeah, even things like having a routine, right, is really helpful.
Yeah, do the stuff you don't want to do and you'll get the results.
Nicely put. I was just going to ask you as well, I guess it's like a wrap-up question coming to the end, which is really beautiful. And I was just going to ask you a piece of advice on step 7, like for someone who's struggling with that today.
Yeah, so it's like from memory, I think there's only 2 or 3 or 4 pages around step 6 and step 7. It's a prayer. I think, like, you're getting into the steps where the rubber's really meeting the road. And I guess the biggest thing is, and I think I've mentioned it as we've gone along this chat, is about being aware of your thoughts and your feelings and not being afraid to speak up, tell on yourself in meetings exactly how you're feeling. It's okay, you know, because more often than not, someone else is experiencing whatever that person's saying in the rooms. And, you know, there's strength in that. And when we can draw off our own personal experiences about what we've gone through or relate to that gives whoever hears that the ability to go to that person and say, hey, I've walked through that, I've been in that place, this is what I did, maybe you could try this. And it is, like, once again, it is suggestive only. And more often than not, by telling on yourself, you'll find a solution. And this is a solution-based program. And if you don't ask, you don't know. And you just got to keep searching, man. Just keep searching. Refuse to sit with whatever you're going through. And once again, that comes back to willingness and doing the things that you don't want to do. Oh, I hope that helps. Yeah.
You've been amazing.
No problem. It's been great.
Awesome. All right. Hey, thanks, Hamish.
No worries. Thanks.
Catch you later. Great. Bye. See ya.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the AA Live show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. Well, there were quite a few takeaways from the time spent with Hamish, and I hope that you found some of those quite compelling. For me, I heard the words like routine and awareness, plus the word resistance, of course. But most of all, I appreciated one of the key ideas that the Step 7 is part of, and that being a solution-based program, and that demands checking and keeping spiritually fit in your daily process of recovery. And staying right size, you hear that a lot in the rooms as well. Hamish also referred to the step seven prayer, or the seventh step prayer, sorry, that many in AA members recite on a daily basis and are maintained to being present in their lives and to seek guidance from their higher power. So I thought I'd read that out. And the traditional prayer goes like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Yeah, so I told you it was going to be a little bit of a short show. So a big shout out tonight for Hamish, if you're listening. What a great way to spend a Sunday. We had a packet of chocolate biscuits each, and like all conversations, it continued beyond the recorded interview. It was pretty cool. I really loved it. Thanks, Hamish. And so to wrap up the show, perhaps a little too early, but that's okay. Alcoholics Anonymous is based on a 12-step program for those who aren't sure what this means. The 12 steps outline a path to spiritual progress through a series of actions designed to draw out a complete mental, emotional, and spiritual shift in perception. We believe the 12 steps can be a critical element of long-term recovery. If tonight's program has resonated with you, or that you're concerned about your drinking patterns, or even if you just want to touch base with the AA program, we can help. So here are the two ways you can contact Alcoholics Anonymous. The phone number is 0800-229-6757. So you can definitely call them anytime, have a chat with someone. Even if you're looking for a meeting list, they can help you out with where the meetings are in any part of the country and whatever time. And the New Zealand website, aa.org.nz, which is really worth exploring. It's really great, actually. There's a lot of good links on that. You can order literature. They've got the meetings and a lot of helpful hints. If you have any queries or questions about how the show is, if you want to respond to the show, our email address is aalive@aaotago.org.nz. And if you want to re-listen to the show or miss parts of the conversation, it's coming up again on Sunday night at 8:30. And after usually about a few days, if you really love it, you can download the show from ORFM website. And that's all we have time for tonight. It's been great. Take care of yourselves out there. Until next time, mate wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.